At Cool Air Products, we developed AC Smart Seal Quick Shot with professionals in mind. It's the only product on the market that's 3-in-1 with sealant, lubricant, and UV dye all in a single application. It's non-toxic, non-flammable, 100% safe to the touch, eco-friendly, and compatible with all refrigerants. It's a safe solution option, backed by years of R&D, Intertech tested, and has sealed millions of leaks. AC Smart Seal, the professional's choice.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the HVAC Know-It-All Podcast. I got a great guest lined up for you again. His name is Eric Ani. You guys on Instagram will know him as at Mechanical Hub. Now, Eric owns his own business, plumbing business, okay? But he does heating as well. He's got a hand in running a website called mechanicalhub.com. We're going to get into a conversation regarding his business and the website, and we're going to talk about some hydronic heating. So listen up, guys. Eric's smart, passionate. All our guests, I wouldn't invite them on if they weren't intelligent and passionate and couldn't add something to the podcast. So Eric's going to add some knowledge to the podcast. Like always, guys, this is the HVAC Know-It-All Podcast. I'm your host, Gary McCready. All right, let's get into some tool talk, guys. I'm going to bring up the Tesla 316-3 because I'm in the middle of making a little video regarding formicary corrosion just to educate you guys on it a little bit. And I'm telling you right now, that leak detector is the best one I've ever held in my hand and found leaks with. It's never not found a leak. So if you guys are in the market, check out the 316-3 from Testo. I'm telling you right now, the thing is gold. All right? Believe me. When it comes to Yellow Jacket, guys, when I first got my Super Evac vacuum pump, my 6CFM Super Evac pump, I opened up the manual and I read something that was really cool and I didn't know before. And I'm going to give this tip to you guys. So when you're changing the oil on your vacuum pump, you want to change that oil hot. So you want to run the vacuum pump for a few minutes beforehand and then change the oil, because warm oil will grab more contaminants. And when you change the oil, it will be released into the bucket or whatever you're putting the old oil into. If you do it cold, you'll leave more contaminants in the pump itself. So that tip comes at you from Yellow Jacket. All right. So visit yellowjacket.com for more of their tools and whatnot. I read a post on my HVAC hub powered by HVAC Know-It-All the other day, and it was a tech talking about a little blue tube of thread sealant. He found it in his apprentice's bag and he was upset. He was upset because guess what, guys? It hardens. It doesn't really work that well. And eventually it breaks down and the threads leak anyway. He went on to thank Refrigeration Technologies for developing and coming out with Nilog, because the product is fabulous. It's unique in this industry, and you're never going to see another product like it. I don't think. It's made from refined refrigerant oil, so it's not going to contaminate the system. So check out Nilog, guys. Assembly lubricant and thread and gasket sealer. Okay, the Armstrong pump contest is now going to December 30th. So if you guys haven't put in a pump yet, you still have time. ArmstrongFluidTechnology.com/HVAC Know-It-All. That's where you go to register the pump. You get your $20 Amazon gift card after the pump has been verified as a unique entry. You heard off the top a little ad for AC Smart Seal. Like I told you guys in the past, it works. It's oil-based. It's non-clogging. You guys need to check it out for your formicary corrosion evaporators. It works. It doesn't clog systems. It doesn't clog gauges. SimpliSend. Talked about SimpliSend in the last podcast. It's by Field Pulse. It's free. It's for estimating and invoicing. Okay, if you want to upgrade to Field Pulse, you can do so at any time. And you can also take advantage of the free 14-day trial from Field Pulse. All right. Go to fieldpulse.com/HVAC Know-It-All to check that out. And True Tech Tools, as always, guys, 8% off your purchases. If you want to save on Testo, go to the homepage of my website, HVACKKnowItAll.com. Scroll down to the TrueTech Tools logo, click it. Once you do, fill out the little form, and you will have preferred Testo pricing once you sign into your TrueTech Tools account. Okay, guys, so Eric is on the phone, and he's been kind enough to grace us with our presence on the HVAC Know It All podcast. And I follow Eric on Instagram, which probably some of you do as well, if you guys are coming from Instagram to listen to this podcast, and you guys would know him as at Mechanical Hub. So how's it going, Eric, tonight?
Yeah, good, Gary. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, not a problem, man. Now, you have a very large following on Instagram. You're up to, what, over 50,000 now, followers?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, it's crazy. We just started Instagram a little over 2 years ago, and it really turns out to be something I enjoy, and apparently people are, you know, interested in what I have to say and show and share, so it's been fun. It's crazy how many people follow along.
It is crazy how it just kind of catches on, and then some of the things you do go viral. Like I saw a video that you did that you threw up on Instagram a while ago, and I was scrolling through my Facebook feed the other day, and I saw that same video on Facebook, and I'm pretty sure if I wasn't too tired, like rubbed my eyes a bit, and I looked down, it had like 2.5 million views, and it was the one of you cleaning up some garbage on the ground. I think it was some wood scraps or wood shavings. And you said something to the point of, this is something electricians haven't learned how to do yet. So that video is hilarious. And I'll tell you why, because I've had this beef for years. I used to do a lot of install for like refrigeration piping and stuff like that. When we'd install some new equipment. And we get the electricians to come in to wire everything up. And then you go back behind to test everything, and all their friggin' wire clippings are on the ground where they left them. I'm like, guys, like, come on, man.
It's kind of a universal frustration, isn't it?
Oh, it really is.
It's fun. So, well, you know, I think sometimes the funniest things are things that are totally true. And, you know, I think that, you know, obviously I'm biased, or I don't know if that's the right word, but I made the little video meme, whatever you want to call it, for fun, but it's based on experience, and it sounds like you have the same experience as I do.
Oh, I think
it's
we all
funny.
Did.
Somebody shared that video back to me and said, this is crazy, man. I can't believe it. And I looked at it. They said something like, you know, oh, it's got so many views. And I knew it did. And I was surprised by that and thankful for it. But then I looked down, and this was just yesterday, and I looked down, and it has over 4 million views now. And I was like, oh, my gosh, this is nuts.
That is nuts. To have 4 million. I couldn't believe it when I saw it. 4 million views for – and that's such a simple little video of something that's so true in the trades. That it just blows my mind that it got that many views, but it was hilarious because I'm like, this guy gets it, man. He knows exactly my pain and everybody else's pain. And I have a buddy that's an electrician, and I asked him once, I said, do you pick up your wire clippings? Because he's a pretty stand-up guy. Like, do you pick up your wire clippings on jobs? He's like, no. And I'm like, why does every electrician do that? And he never had an answer for me. It's like they think, maybe they think they're God, the God to the trades on the job, and they just get to do whatever they want. I don't know if that's what they think, but for me, one of the things I was taught early is you don't leave a job site dirty. You clean it up before you leave, because if you leave it dirty, that just shows the kind of the technician that you are. Like, you're sloppy, you don't care. That's the kind of judgment you're going to have after you leave. I don't know if you agree with that or not, but.
Well, I read some of the comments on that Facebook video, and, you know, a lot of people were saying the same thing you just said, and I really feel that way. I was taught that your truck has to be clean, your work area should be clean. It's really a indicator of the type of work that you do. If you're a real messy person and you are disorganized, and, you know, people might perceive you to not care as much about what you're doing. And that might not be the case for everybody. I mean, everybody's got a different personality. I understand that. But it was taught to me early on when I first started out as an apprentice that, you know, keep things neat, clean. You're going to be more efficient. People are going to think, you know, better of you. And ultimately that matters in the end, because I mean, I'm self-employed and I have an unlimited car wash pass, and I wash my truck like almost in the wintertime. I probably wash my truck daily. It's because when I show up to the person's house or the person's office space or something like that, they see the truck. They're going to look out and they're going to see me going in and out of it. And I want them to be impressed by a clean vehicle, because I think that I know some people care enough to, or think about it enough or long enough to think that that's probably, you know, if I care about my truck and my appearance and how my tools look, then I probably care about my job. And that's like my overall goal. So,
yeah, no, I totally agree. I mean, I'll be the first to admit the back of my truck's never always the cleanest, just because sometimes I'll have like five things on the go and I'll pick up stuff for everything. Then I got to change filters. That's part of what I do. Then you got to throw a whole bunch of filters in your truck and move on. And by the end of the week, sometimes my truck's a bit of a disaster, but I try to keep it semi-organized. But for me, a job site though is the most important, because that's where the customer is going to walk after you're done. He's going to see, or she's going to see your mess if you've left it there, and it's not going to look good on you, because if they call your boss is not going to be happy, and most likely you're going back there for free, not to get paid, to clean that up. So, I mean, within your company, do you have employees, or are you the only guy?
Used to have employees. Now I'm just one man show again.
What? One man show. Okay. So it's even more important for you, because you're a one man show, to make sure that you tidy up after you're done. Because I mean, when you're the only guy, that's bringing in the money, right? You have to really make sure you're right on top of your game. So what's cool about this is you and I, we've spoken through Instagram, but we've never actually had a conversation on the phone. So I guess we're just kind of learn about each other organically here as we go. So if you don't mind, if you could tell me a little bit of your background and how you got into the trade and kind of what you're up to these days.
Yeah. So how I got into the trade was probably similar to a lot of people, actually. I started out as a teenager being told I wanted to earn money. And I was lucky enough to have family that were a couple uncles and a grandfather that were plumbers. And my dad was a land surveyor, so I used to have to go hold the story pole for him. And then, gosh, that was the most boring thing in the entire world for me. So at an early age, I didn't think I'd ever want to do something like that. So I said, Dad, how can I go out and make some money? And tried the mowing lawns thing and stuff, and that never really added up. So I was told I had to go work with my grandpa and uncles during the summer when I was out of school. That's probably when I was like 13, 14, 15 years old, and helped out. I was the gopher, you know, go for this and that, and dig holes and things like that. And moving forward, graduated high school, did really well in school, enjoyed school, and decided that I would try to give college a try. And so I got accepted into the University of Minnesota at the engineering school, and I went to a couple of years of engineering school. And my biggest fault in that situation was that I was paying as I was going. So I was working all the time and I didn't ever have any money and didn't quite know. I don't think anybody does when they're 17, 18, 19 years old, what they want to do for the rest of their life, or at least I didn't. So I decided what I was doing at the time just really wasn't right, and I was going to take some time off of school. And so I just, you know, pursued looking into an apprenticeship program, because I knew I needed a job, and I was the type of person that wouldn't probably sit around even back then. So I joined the union in Minneapolis as an apprentice, first year apprentice. And I did that because I knew that they were going to send me to school and I was going to get training. And so I went through my apprenticeship through the UA, the United Association, and in Minnesota, we have a state license. So I had to, you know, once to become a journeyman. So once I finished my apprenticeship, I took the journeyman test, passed, did really well in as a plumbing apprentice in school. So the test was pretty easy for me. And I was working, and I enjoyed what I was doing. I worked for a great company, smaller company with like 30 plumbers that treated everybody really well and more or less like family. And I didn't have any reason to go back to school because I was, you know, good at what I was doing for as much experience as I had, at least, and making good money. And I just kind of never looked back from there. I worked for a few years as a journeyman plumber for that company. And early on, as soon as I could, in Minnesota, you have to work for a year as a journeyman, then you can sit for your master's test, which I think would be like a red seal in Canada. I'm not exactly sure of the technicalities there, but as a master plumber, I can then purchase a surety bond and open up my own business. So, worked as a journeyman with my master's license for a few years, and then decided to go out on my own in 2004, 2005. And just like every, you know, probably 90% of all trades workers, I was a good mechanic and terrible at running a business and didn't know the difference. So I struggled for a little while and had a lot of people tell me, you know, all the things I was doing wrong and help me out, which is, I'm thankful to this day for. And the kind of the rest is history. Just kept working hard and trying to provide for my family. You know, got married young and had kids young, so that I was providing for now four people when I was just a few years into my business. I want to say I've enjoyed it ever since, but it hasn't been easy. And in 2012, I met a gentleman by the name of John Mason Brink. He's down. He was an editor for one of the trade magazines. And he had an idea to start this website business called Mechanical Hub, and it would be more or less like a resource, an online resource for plumbing and heating contractors that were looking for information on hydronics and plumbing and a little bit of forced air. And so we kind of punted and put a plan together, and here we are in 2000, almost 19, and we're still online, and we're running a pretty decent business, and I do all of our social media, and that's how you know me from Instagram. Is motivation there was to, you know, I got to get this brand out there, I got to tell people who we are, and have a little bit of fun with it.
Okay, so that's kind of cool, because I didn't really understand, or I didn't know that Mechanical Hub came from this website of resources and information. I thought you just kind of started that on your own. So tell me more about like the website itself. Like what can a technician go there to find? Like what kind of resources can they find on the website?
Mostly what you should expect from Mechanical Hub is for it to function kind of like a trade magazine, but it's updated daily. It's online, so it's no subscription, it's free. And you'll find product videos, you know, news releases that come out from the manufacturers, hey, we got this new product coming, things like that. And we try to share that information on a timely basis. I mean, literally sometimes minutes after we receive it, because it being a website, it's really easy to update. And so John and I, and we have another guy that works with us. And so we try to create as much content organically as we can. We share a lot of information that's just in the industry that you might see in a printed magazine, but we're doing it daily and trying to differentiate by interacting with the, you know, the other contractors that are on, you know, visiting our site. We do some video work. We visit all the major trade shows, and we try to bring video and updates from those trade shows so that people that might not be able to go to the trade show can at least come to Mechanical Hub and see some new stuff that might be coming out from a manufacturer they like to buy a product from, or tools or whatever. So it's really just a lot of things all at once, and we're constantly moving. So
it's making
it's,
more sense
it's
to
been
me
enjoyable.
Now. Because I see the videos of you at the trade shows, and it's making more sense to me now that you're getting out to all these trade shows, and then
putting the information back onto the website. And I was going to ask you, running your own business, how do you find the time to get away from the business and not do the work that your customers need you to do to go to these trade shows? How do you divide your time?
Well, so it's been that's the big balancing act, right? For the longest time, having a couple employees made it possible, or at least I could dedicate more time to the website as we're trying to grow it, and take a couple days here or there to go like to the AHR Expo, or a small tool event. You know, Milwaukee would invite us to their new tool symposium yearly, and so we would go for a couple of days. And you're right, being away, it meant that I wasn't turning a wrench or there to even answer the phone most times if one of my best customers called. So having a couple of people working for me while we're doing that made it possible. Now fast forward, and as time goes on, kind of figure out what really works best for me was that not managing employees is probably my strong suit. So in other words, I'm not very good at managing multiple people. And it got really tough for a little while there, about 3-4 years ago, when the economy was still trying to pull out of the lull that it was in. And I felt that all the work I was out trying to get was to pay other people's mortgages and health insurance, and there wasn't very much left over at the end for me. So we made some decisions here at home to scale back. And then now the juggling act again came with, how do I spend time on Mechanical Hub and Ani Plumbing, which is my business, my plumbing and heating business. And so I split it about 50-50. I take on less work than I used to. But the type of work that I take on is more profitable. I'm a little more selective, but I've built a reputation in my community, and really kind of a little bit of outstate Minnesota, where I've worked very hard to become hopefully one of the better hydronic contractors in the area, so that people are typically referring me to all the work that I take on. And that makes it a little more it makes it easier to be a little more selective, I guess.
Yeah.
Not trying to turn away work, but I'm, the leads are quality.
That's good.
So I'm able to take on, the jobs I'm taking on are already going to be a little more profitable, a little more understanding. People are willing to work with you for timing and things like that.
Gotcha. So I wanted to ask you one question before I get into kind of the work that you do. So I've asked this on social media a few times, and I think it kind of helps paint a picture, because you're in Minnesota, right? Which city are you in, or town?
I'm in a little small town called Elk River, which is about an hour northwest of downtown Minneapolis. So right on the edge of the metro area.
Okay, cool. So let's say we're in the vicinity of the metropolitan area. What does the average, or what can a good HVAC or plumbing technician make, like high end, and what is the average cost of like a 2,000 square foot home? It kind of puts cost of living and what you make into perspective, because I asked this question about a month ago on social media on one of my Facebook pages, and it was crazy to see the difference between what guys are making around North America and what the cost of a home was. And it just blew my mind, some of the answers. So if you don't mind me asking, average cost of the house, and then high end money that a tech could bring home per hour.
No, that's a really awesome question. And it's something I think about all the time, probably for the same reasons you do, because I know that the answers can vary so much from one place to another. So in the metro area of Minneapolis, the average cost of a home is about $330,000 for what would be considered maybe your starter house.
Yeah.
That would be, 1,500 to 2,200 square foot house.
Okay.
New construction. If you're looking at existing homes, I think the average cost is probably around $275,000 to $300,000.
Okay.
In that size range. And then the average plumber's wage annually is right around 60 to 65,000. HVAC techs, if you're doing service, are probably 5 to 10 grand less. And then, of course, you've got all those business models that incentivize sales and service. That I know plumbers, and I know heating. You know, we'll just say it, call them a heating guy. I know those two. I know guys that work in both of those positions that are making upwards of $100,000 to $150,000 a year.
Well.
Doing service work.
Yeah. So where I am, like I'm in Toronto, the average licensed, fully licensed technician could be easily bringing home $100,000 or $100,000. And that's Canadian. So we're looking at like, I don't know, let's say $80,000 US, right? But the cost of a home is ridiculous. It's like, just outside, it's called the Greater Toronto area, like downtown Toronto.
Yeah, GTA, right?
Yeah, that's right, GTA. You're gonna pay an arm and a leg inside of the GTA, but outside, like in the close suburban areas, you're paying $1 million for a 2,000 square foot home. So I mean, the cost of real estate is incredible, and like out in the, like I'm about an hour and a half north of the GTA, and the cost of homes out in the area I am is still around the $600,000 to $700,000 area for like a 2,000 to 3,000 square foot home. So, I mean, I don't get how they get these real estate prices and where they come from. But we went through this boom a few years ago, and it's kind of flattened out, but it hasn't really came down. I'm hoping. It doesn't. Well, I guess it doesn't really matter. Depending on when you're selling or when you're buying it, I guess the changes could benefit you or not. But that's kind of the deal here. And what was the other question I was going to ask you? So you do a lot of hydronic stuff, right? Like boilers and whatnot.
Yeah, it's probably about 90% of what I do and have done for about the last 8 years.
That's cool. So it falls in line with the H in HVAC, even though you are a plumber by trade, right?
Yeah, yeah. So a lot of hydronics in Minnesota here are done by plumbing contractors. And, you know, some of the work is enforced. It's not written in the code this way, but there are certain aspects of what I do that have to be done by a licensed plumber. If I'm connected to domestic hot water, that has to be done by a licensed plumber. So that being said, there are a lot of heating only contractors that are not licensed plumbers, that are not employing licensed plumbers, that are working on hydronic systems, of course. But whether they're getting around it in certain areas because it's not necessarily being enforced, but or in other instances they're subcontracting the potable water portion of the job. They're using like an HVAC technician type of, you know, installer.
So what is the main, when it comes to hydronics, what are you, boilers, instantaneous water heaters? Like what is your main?
Yeah,
go on, sorry.
Well, I do about 75% service and service repair and replacement. And, the remainder of the work in the hydronics portion of my business, about 75% of it is repair and replacement. And then the rest would be new installation. I try to stay out of, I don't work with any home builders anymore. When I first started out, I did for quite a while. Then the economy tanked, lost a bunch of money because a few of them went bankrupt, that kind of thing. Changed my business model and went direct to the homeowner. So almost, I'd say 99% of the business I do, occasionally there are a couple contractors who will call and I'll work for them. Having worked with them in the past and had good experience, I'll do one or two jobs here or there. But the majority of all the work we do, or I do now alone, is done direct with the homeowner. So I do mostly, if not all, residential work.
Yep.
We're doing hot water boilers. Almost everything we do is gas or electric. In Minnesota, we don't have a lot of oil systems. There are some in outstate, extreme outstate areas, you know, real rural greater northern Minnesota kind of areas, there are still some oil systems around, but in the metro area, and as you get closer to the metro area, it's almost all natural gas, LP or electric. So let
me ask you this. So you're doing boilers. These are centralized in a home, right? So how are we getting the heat to the home? Are we using radiators? Are we using fan coils with kind of strategically placed around the home? How are we distributing that heat in the home?
I'd say up until about homes that were built up until about the mid to late 80s there's a lot of copper fin tube baseboard heat.
Yep. Okay.
Houses that were built really post-war houses, so anything after about 55, 60, you started seeing a lot of homes that, you know, track homes that were built, built in a day kind of thing. And they were installing a lot of copper fin tube at the time. You get inner city with the older homes that are, you know, anywhere from 100 to 200 years old, there's a lot of cast iron radiators. And so as you move from the inner city outward, where the development was post-war, you see the copper fin tube. Further out into the suburbs you go, more modern, you see a lot more forced air. And in those cases, if there is a boiler in the house, it would be done with a fan coil.
Yep.
Or okay. Radiant. So we do a lot of radiant systems that are built with, you know, typical oxygen barrier PEX type of in-floor heat. Do some radiant ceilings. Occasionally when we have fun, we get to put it in the wall, that kind of thing.
Now, I've never lived in a home or really even visited a home that has radiant in-floor heating. But I'll tell you that I've heard that it's one of the best ways to heat a home, because a lot of the times in the winter when you're cold, a lot of the heat, it leaves through your feet when you're walking around on a cold floor. But if you keep your feet warm, walk around that floor, it kind of keeps your entire body warm. So there's a lot of value in radiant in-floor heating, isn't there?
Yeah. So it's the conductive process. So a lot of times, you know, in any kind of structure, there's a benefit to having radiant versus a forced air system for comfort purposes, for sure. And yeah, you know, I mean, I've never heard anybody complain to me that the floor, you know, a warm floor was uncomfortable. I mean, it can be, too, yes, but
I've stood on one of those electric pads that people put under tiles. You know what
yeah.
I mean? And then strategic places, like I know I've been in, I forget whose house it was, but they had one installed underneath the tiles where the sink was, because they stood there and did dishes or whatever. So that portion of the floor was warm. And standing on that portion, oh, it was beautiful. I loved it. So I could just imagine the whole house being heated that way. It would be so nice.
And it can be so extreme, you know, with the hydronic systems, with the high efficiency equipment, and when they're installed properly, it can be just so extremely efficient. Operating costs for the end user are low. You know, obviously comfort is high, and ultimately, to be honest with you, very little maintenance, and that's a great thing, because I've yet to find more than about a handful of people in 20 years that have been doing this that even care to talk about maintenance or think about it. You know, it's always wait till it's broke.
Yeah.
Then we'll think about fixing it, you know. So it's a nice thing about hydronics, and for the most part, now appliances are another thing, you know, the boiler, or, you know, just the same as the air handler and a furnace and the air conditioner or a split system. I mean, all of that requires maintenance, but we can't, and we have no enforcement hands on that. I know there are areas around, you know, other countries that require it, and I really wish we had that here, but it's not happening. So what's up
so
to us as contractors? And
just north of the GTA, when I'm driving towards home or even back down to work in the morning, I pass a property, and rumor is that Elton John owns the property. I guess his husband lives in Toronto, or he's from Toronto. And when you drive past the house, right, he has this long kind of windy driveway, and you can see it because it's on a hill and you're going up a hill. And if you look, the driveway has never got snow on it in the winter. And I'm like, Does that guy have a radiant heated driveway? Because that would cost, I don't know what it would cost, but this guy's driveway's got to be, it's got to be like half, not maybe not half a mile, but quarter mile long with the zigzags. Like, what would that cost?
It's incredible. So I've done a fair amount. We just call it snow melt. So I've done a fair amount of snow melt systems for residential driveways. Back when I worked for a contractor, we did it for commercial properties. There's a lot of benefit and there's a lot of motivation to do that, believe it or not, especially with commercial properties. There are big incentives, not necessarily upfront, but on the back end from your insurance company, because you eliminate or at least cut way down on the possibility that people will slip on your sidewalk, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right to think or wonder or assume or just know this, that it is extremely expensive to operate.
Well, he's got the money if anybody does. The guy's loaded.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, I never make an assumption for any one of my customers that they can't afford it, you know. That's the first way of losing business. But you know, there's a lot of snow melt systems all over the country and, you know, North America, because I know there's a lot in Canada too. And I've even seen it in, you know, more modest properties, some place that you or I could afford to live in. And, you know, it comes down to, you know, what do you want and how bad do you want it? So I've seen people's gas bills that hover around $1,000 a month just so they don't have to shovel.
Wow.
And for my money, you know, and I'm not talking anything major, not a quarter mile long Elton John driveway. So for my money, I can pay somebody to plow my driveway a lot of times for less than that. So.
Oh, yeah. Yep. For sure. So let me ask you this. I heard you say PEX. Now, is PEX we can bury under a floor and that's okay?
Yeah, for sure.
There's never been any like ruptures or like or leaks or anything like that you've seen?
Well, I mean, I guess I have encountered some failures.
Yeah.
There have been products in my time in the industry that have come along and gone away because they were made of materials or a process that was inferior. But for the most part, I'll say, to answer your question, it's not an issue. The products that are meeting all the standards and have been proven for 20, 30, 40 years plus are definitely not going to fail in like an embedded concrete or underneath a floor and on subfloor, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's really a non-issue, to be honest with you.
I was going to say, I've never actually, like, you see it all the time, and it seems to be like a growing trend of in-floor heating, and I've never actually really seen or heard any signs of any major issues. So that is a good sign. And, like, I don't do any plumbing myself, and I've never actually, like, I have PEX in my home. That's how they put the water distribution in my house is with PEX. I've never had a problem with it, but I didn't know you could bury it. So that's interesting for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty tough stuff, to be honest with you. I mean, they run in the construction phase. If you're doing it in a, you know, a thick slab, a concrete slab, they'll run buggies across it, things like that. And it's pretty resilient. I think if you had the time to learn about it, you'd be surprised. I mean, to think that a plastic, you know, piece of plastic tubing could take the beating that this stuff really does. And then once it's covered with concrete, I mean, nothing's going to happen to it, except I was going to touch on this. The failures that we see are generally caused by other humans, you know, so drilling into floors or, you know, either because they don't know or they weren't taking care of the, you know, proper precautions at the time. But I'd say I've never personally experienced a failure because the tubing was bad. I know that it's happened for sure, because like I said, there's a couple products that have come and gone. Any failure I've ever encountered or had to repair myself was, you know, man-made, you know, somebody drilling into a floor or setting an anchor or something like that, go too deep. Or just not taking, like I said, not taking the proper steps. I mean, you can see this stuff pretty well with infrared thermal imaging. So
yeah, that's
you
true.
You can decide whether or not to drill that hole, you know?
Yeah. And I've, the pictures that I've seen online of it before the floor goes over top or before the concrete gets poured, it actually looks really clean. Like the work, it looks really nice. And the fact that you don't have to solder and worry about solder joints and that in the floor is incredible. I mean, because then you get guys that don't know how to solder, or you get a bad solder, and you know what I mean? I would never trust a solder under the floor, but yeah, this stuff looks like it's pretty solid for sure. So,
yeah.
Do you get into any instantaneous water heaters or anything like that? Because I've had a lot of questions on them from a lot of people. If they actually work well, can they keep up to a couple of people having showers at the same time? Do you get into any of that stuff at all?
Yeah. So when I first started out as an apprentice, I worked for a company that was doing large custom homes and had a customer base that was decades old. And so that opened up to opportunity. They were pretty progressive and they're always willing to try something new. And when I say try something new, it was relatively new. I know the technology's been around forever. To be honest with you, there are 40-year-old tankless water heaters out there. But they weren't popular until, you know, late 90s, early 2000s. And even then, they weren't really popular. So I think I've installed my first tankless water heater, or was in on an install, maybe 2000, 2001. And I was fascinated by it immediately. And just because there's a technical aspect and know-how that's needed to do the job right and trouble-free for the owner. And I never looked back. I just look forward on those things and I love them. I recommend them to my customers all the time. And to be honest with you, I can say this with certainty that I've never had any major issues for performance. I've tried a couple models out that weren't maybe as good as others. And, you know, you live and you learn. You try something new because maybe it's lower cost and, you know, they promised the world to you, but it didn't quite perform. But we've settled on one brand and a couple models that they supply, and I have just taken advantage of that as often as I possibly can. My mother's house has a tankless water heater, and our family's cabin has one in it. You know, there you go. That's my own house.
Yeah.
That's my take on them.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So if you're going to talk something up, I mean, and you put it in your own house, obviously you've got belief in the product. So what is the brand that you think is the top of the line when it comes to the tankless stuff?
Well, I know, you know, from a factual standpoint, there are a couple of really good models. What I spent, you know, when I spend my money, obviously I'm making a decision there and I'm voting on a certain brand. I've been installing the Navien brand for a number of years. I don't know how long ago it was, but it's been a number of years. They came out with the current model that we are having, you know, a lot of success with. And before that, they had some models that weren't so great, but, you know, like every company, they got to figure it out. And they're Korean manufacturer. They're all made in Korea. The other brand out there that does really well in the U.S. and has produced a really solid product is Rinnai, and they're a Japanese model. And they're actually, believe it or not, starting to manufacture some of the units in the U.S. down in Georgia.
Are you still there? Hello?
Yeah, I think.
Okay, so
did you hear any of that?
Yeah, no, I heard that the manufacturer down. That's okay. Sometimes.
Yeah, I quiet for a second there.
So they manufacture some of them down in Georgia, the Japanese model. That's what I heard from the last sentence there.
Yeah. No, and that's where I ended. So, to answer your question, I've been using Navien. I have installed Rinnai in the past, and really comes down to kind of a supply and training and service. So I've settled with the Navien model and had very good success with it.
Yeah, cool. Like I was thinking about putting one in my home. My home is 6 years old, and we got this really, like, we have a tank, and it's one of the more efficient tanks on the market because it doesn't run very much. Like, you could be in the basement for an hour and never hear the thing come on. So, I mean, I know it's a pretty efficient tank, but I called them like, so it's a rental. I mean, most tanks are these days, I guess. So I called the rental place up and I'm like, I was thinking of getting rid of this tank. And they're like, well, it's $1,000 to get out of your agreement. I'm like, what? $1,000? I'm like, they're like, yeah, we have to pay somebody to come get it and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, well, I said, I'm a gas fitter. How about I just remove it and I bring it to you guys? And they're like, no, we can't do that. I'm like, okay, whatever. So I'm still on the hook for this thing. But once, I think there's like some sort of pay down plan after so many years, like that $1,000 starts to decrease, just like when you buy a cell phone, like it, if you break it and you go buy a new one the next day, you got the cell phone for free, but if you break it and you want a new one, you got to pay $500 to get out of your contract. So it's something like that. But once I can get out of using this thing, I think I'm going to go to the tankless because, I mean, from what I hear, they're really well made. There's not a lot of problems with them. And, I've been hearing a lot of good things. I actually did do a service call on one of them about 4 or 5 months ago. My friend, he called me up and he's like, yeah, my tankless water heater's not working. I'm like, man, I've never even worked on one before. So I went and had a look at it. And what it was is the igniter, it was getting power, but it wasn't creating the spark. So I couldn't really help him out because I was way too busy. So he was able to track the thing down online and order it. And they sent it right to them. I mean, that's not supposed to be allowed. You're supposed to be a gas fitter to buy these parts, but he was able to get the part and put it in. So, I mean.
Yeah, the internet. Isn't that a wonder?
Yeah, that's the only problem I've ever heard.
Yeah, well, I mean, we would complain, of course, in that situation that somebody else could do it. But then when we want it ourselves, it's the best thing ever that, I can just go online and order it.
Oh, exactly.
I want to comment real quick.
Yeah.
So you have your rental program for water heaters, as far as I understand, is now I could be wrong, but I believe it to be a Canadian thing. And like I said, I could be wrong. There may be somewhere in the U.S. or in other countries that do that. But I want to say this as a business owner, and somebody that's always looking for an opportunity, I look at that and I think, my goodness, that is what a business that would be to go around and collect. It's like starting your own cell phone company. It's crazy. People are using, paying to use your water heater. You own them, And then I understand that there's maintenance or service involved and replacement. So I know there's a lot of cost, but when there isn't cost involved, it's just profits, pure profits. Crazy. It's, I think it's such an interesting idea. I've never seen anybody do it in the U.S. or at least that I've heard of. And so I've thought about it. I thought, man, I wonder if I could get that going, but I don't think I have
the same company that rents the water heater. They do it they do it with everything. They do it with furnaces. They do it with, air conditioners. So let's say you don't have an air conditioner and you can't afford the $4,000 to $6,000 or whatever it's going to cost you to put it in the home. They'll be like, okay, well, we'll put it in and you pay us $50 for life, like for the rental. So by the time that you're done, you end up paying like, $12,000-$15,000 for this AC that, that would have been $4,000 or $5,000 if you just bought it outright. So yes, it's an incredible business idea to do this. But at the same time, you gotta think of the, can I do this and my conscience is okay with it? You know what I mean? But I guess in a way you are helping out people because they can't afford the upfront money and you are running a business. And the number one rule of running a business is to make money. I get that. So anyway, go on. What were you going to
say? Well, I could look past it.
Could you?
After all these years, I know what you're saying and I am probably just like you. I don't want to take advantage of anybody and I don't feel that that's right ever. However, I look at this and it's a service And when somebody comes to you looking and knowing what your service is and they know what it's going to cost, I don't have a problem with that. It's just like a credit card, you know? I mean, you know it's going to cost you money to use it, so it's up to you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I mean, the people that are doing it and doing it right, I mean, they are making money from it. And like I said, number one rule of a business is to make money, so.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I think it's a Canadian thing as far as the business model goes. Which makes me wonder, like, why is that not happening here? I guess maybe I've just missed it. Maybe it is somewhere. I'm not sure.
Who knows? Well, that could be my my next topic of discussion on my Facebook group. I'll find out.
Yeah,
for
see
you.
How helpful. I'm sure
I'll
you can find a lot of
you.
People that don't get the idea.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah. Okay, man. So I don't want to keep you too long. I know you're busy, and I'll be going in. I'll be cracking probably a beer before I go to bed. So that's my wind down time. I have bought a case of, not King cans, but tall cans of Stella. So I'm going to enjoy one of those and kick back. But yeah, I got to thank you for getting onto the podcast, man. I really appreciate it. I know we've talked about doing something like this for a very long time, and I'm just glad we were able to get together.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the opportunity. I do. And if you ever, if I can ever come back on, please let me know.
Oh yeah. No, for sure, man. These podcasts are going to keep going for a while. So the more guests and the more people that are willing to, just kind of help me out with their time, the better. So if you do me a favor, whenever you have a minute, if you can send me the link to your website, and I'll put it into the podcast summary, so then that way other guys can go on and check it out and whatnot.
Yeah, I'll do that right away.
Awesome. Cool. Okay, Eric, you have a great night, and good luck with the business and the website, and I'll talk to you soon, man.
All right. Thanks, man. Have a nice night.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
So I hope you guys enjoyed the podcast. Eric and I had a nice chat. I enjoyed it. I learned stuff. I hope you learned stuff. I hope you guys check out Eric's webpage, mechanicalhub.com. I'm going to put it into the summary of the podcast. And if you guys don't check out the summary of the podcast, you guys can and should, because the tools I talk about during the podcast, I put a link to them down below. I also put a link to TrueTech Tools so you can save money on your purchase, 8%. And I put a link for the Testo savings as well, the preferred Testo pricing, a link to my website, and other good stuff. So make sure you check out the summaries after the podcast, guys, because there could be valuable information in there, some stuff you might be interested in to link to and check out. But I'm out, guys. I've had enough. Happy HVACing.